You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday. Want to take a trip through history's major events or explore interesting geographical features and even some interesting scientific developments? Well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world.
Don't wait for love.
There, dear listeners, were the sounds of the, well, if we call them the Black Keys in terms of their particular take. And you're joining me here specifically on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, in terms of where we specifically, well, apologies for that loss of clarity. But welcoming you once again on the Sunday morning session, dear listeners. And this is my Sunday morning take. The sounds that you just heard, they were from the Black Keys with their song, The Weight of Love. And obviously that weight of love, you know, is also the particular, you know, relationship between you, myself, and Sunday mornings, as you're going to be in my company, as always, from 5 a.m. up until 7 a.m. Now, the particular interesting thing that we've obviously got to look at is that, you know, the rain has returned for those of us that are in the capital. If you're anywhere else, I do hope the rain has also returned for you and your particular town or vicinity that you find yourself in. But it's always a particular interesting, you know, sort of like weather. Well, okay, let me not say interesting weather. It's sort of like expected that you wish to have that cool weather, the dampness, obviously, that comes with rainfall, and just the extra cool, you know, coolness that comes along with it, primarily during the night periods and so forth, because we obviously know how, you know, warm and hot Namibia can get, and specifically when there's not been any rainfall, then it seems like someone just immediately sort of like ramped up the particular heat meter. But yeah, it's obviously good to see the rain back, and it's obviously to enjoy the particular sort of like coolness and damp and clamp conditions that obviously come with the rainfall. Now,
starting off here on our session, specifically on my Sunday morning take, and where we obviously take a look at everything, history, everything, geography, a little bit of science, and a little bit of everything else in between. Our discussion for this morning takes an interesting twist or an interesting perspective. The twist is of course there, primarily because it helped change the perspective of how we look at health, and specifically health associated to the habit of smoking cigarettes. Now, please, if you're a smoker, this is not a particular personal attack, on you, but it's to actually point out where does all this particular safety labeling, health warning or health caution warnings and labeling that you sometimes see as a smoker on your cigarette packets and any other related tobacco packets or tobacco products, where most of this ultimately stemmed from or came from. Now, it didn't immediately start when this key or important development, because it's a development, which is actually an acknowledgement of health-related risks to smoking that started this whole particular process, because obviously that secondary situation regarding labeling and the warning labels that you now see on tobacco products obviously came a little bit later, specifically in Namibia and in Southern Africa. I think they started in the last 20 or so years. Because those health label warnings were not, you know, you didn't find them in the 90s. And if you're going to ask me, Dwight, how did you know as a kid, what it looked like? Well, I just fair to say that I knew a whole bunch of adults back then, and the health label warnings were not on the cigarette packaging or packets back then. And it's a complete stark difference between what we see today, where you see the health label warning almost everywhere. However, back in the 90s, the health label warnings were, they were just not there. So our discussion has an interesting talking point, as it obviously has culminated in something severe that came about in 2002. So, in terms of looking at this day in history event that actually starts off this whole particular discussion, is that on the 11th of January, specifically, the U.S. Federal, not the U.S. Federal Commission on that scenario, but the United States Surgeon General in 1964, who was a gentleman by the name of Luther Terry, announced that cigarette smoking is linked to lung cancer. And remember, this is back in 1964. Now, the United States, even though for its modern day particular, you know, issues that we are very aware of, there have obviously been many positives that they've contributed towards, specifically in the realm of public safety. Now, how did this particular labeling come about? But before I get into the labeling itself or the acknowledgement by this U.S. health authority, the Surgeon General, is you've got to look at a significant historic event that came about. So I don't know if any of you guys bought magazines in the 2000s and in the 90s when magazine reading was heavy. I know I was exposed to, in my sort of like, you know, as a school kid, if you wanted to sort of like improve on your reading and stuff, I read a lot of magazines that my parents bought. My siblings also had their aspect in terms of the kinds of magazines that they bought themselves. I mean, I read a whole bunch of magazines and some scenarios I was not supposed to read. We'll only stop there. But just to let you know, they were sort of like the GQ's, what was the other one's name? Is it not Men's Health? Yeah, it was Men's Health. And the other one was, Sports Illustrated, when it was still being distributed in Namibia, especially the South African edition. And obviously they had interesting articles, you know, to look at and to look into. And, the subject matter was obviously based upon a, South Africa centric and, you know, Western world based, perspectives, but they had interesting articles or obviously highlighted in them. But central to those particular publications was also the kinds of advertising that they had. And in it, you would find, the odd tobacco product being advertised. It did have a health warning on the advert, on the advertisement. But there was also the site specifically of the advert. Now, what had been a significant turning point is that in 2002, or is it actually 2001? Actually, yes, in 2002, a landmark court case was won successfully filed and won by the widow. Meaning the wife of the famous Marlboro man model, because he technically was a model. Now, this is as a California jury awarded a $28 billion in damages award. Against the tobacco company Philip Morris. Now, on 4 October of 2002, a Los Angeles jury awarded $28 billion in punitive damages against the tobacco maker Philip Morris, who is the largest tobacco damages award that had ever been issued in an individual case. The individual plaintiff, known as Betty Bullock, was a 64-year-old woman with an inoperable lung cancer who sued the tobacco giant for negligence, strict product liability, and fraud. Now, 8 days before that, on 26 September, the same jury awarded $850,000 in compensatory damages to Bullock, making the punitive damages to compensatory damages ratio a whopping 33,000-1. Now, the award is historically significant specifically for the following reasons, being that first, the $28 billion in damages was the largest ever awarded to an individual plaintiff, because in the year 2000, $145 billion in punitive damages was awarded by a Florida jury, but the case was a class action with over 500,000 plaintiffs, meaning 500,000 people came together, put up this single large defense, or this, not single large defense, but rather the single large application, and that $145 billion was paid out to all of them. However, this is to one person, the 2002 event, and it specifically was to this one individual. The second reason was that the timing of the award is important because the late 1990s and the early 2000s saw the bucking of a previous trend of virtually universal success by the tobacco companies in fending off lawsuits, a trend that started in the 1950s. Now, remember, on 11 January of 1964, the U.S. Surgeon General confirmed that smoking cigarettes or smoking tobacco products is linked to lung cancer. 1964, and much of the legal challenges specifically actually started beginning since the 1950s. Now, the particular scenario that we're obviously looking at is that the trends reversal of the successful defense that tobacco companies could put up started eroding, and it was in part due to increased public awareness of the health risks that were associated or that were posed by tobacco use. The more important side of that was also that this was also thanks to increased access to tobacco companies' internal operations and communications, meaning obviously leaked, you know, leaked communications and memos and sort of like, you know, not trade secrets, but rather in terms of the stance or meetings of boards and managers or management and stuff like that. You know, what are these meetings, you know, highlight and bring to light? Did they know? Did they test? Did they actually go and look at the impact of what their product has on its customer base? So on and so forth. Now, the trial judge in the Bullock case, meaning in the 2002 case, was that the evidence that demonstrated, or the evidence that was included in the Bullock case, demonstrated that tobacco company executives' knowledge since the 1950s was that cigarette smoke caused lung cancer and that nicotine was a highly addictive drug specifically contained within the tobacco products. On top of this, the evidence also demonstrated that tobacco companies destroyed any research results that showed any adverse or that showed an adverse health impact from tobacco use, and further, and also further on, went to great lengths to convince the public that smoking was not harmful nor addictive. The evidence also showed that tobacco companies actively marketed their products also to children. Now, obviously, this was lawsuits, legal action that was brought forward in the United States. Ultimately, in a scenario in terms of an African, Southern African context, it is safe to say I have never heard of anything else. I've never seen anything else. Much of this has happened specifically only in the United States. And obviously, this is a aspect in terms of looking at whether or not the use of the product actually is also, you know, sort of like viewed in the same light with the same particular public awareness with regards to also, you know, obviously purchasing and consuming. The indication, obviously, of the period that we are citing here since the 1950s, whereas in 1964, the U.S. Surgeon General brought out a report that actually confirmed this, that actually started all this whole scenario in its own right. Now, with that particular report, it actually laid down the first time that a government agency literally stepped in and actually gave their particular $5 worth of insight on a major health-related subject matter, or subject matter that is under strain or that is under technically threat, specifically for the public health. Or actually, no. Yeah, the public health actually being, you know, exposed to a severe public health threat that exists out there. Now, many people would argue, how would it be a public health threat? Obviously, if it's just one person that would be a cigarette smoker or a pipe smoker, a tobacco pipe smoker or a cigar smoker, you know, it's only that user that can be identified as the immediate risk factor to the particular product's use. You can say yes, but in so often cases and scenarios, much of these particular users are not people who stand on one side, you know, consuming the product. They actually stand sometimes within conversation. And in some cases, the fellow group members of that conversation are also users sometimes. In other scenarios, if it is also a group setting or a collective setting where you'll find a couple or a few tobacco users, is that they would sometimes smoke within those particular crowded scenarios. And in many particular cases, when you go home, you also don't know the particular conditions under which people, consume the product in their own personal spaces. In many cases, there are very few smokers that I know who would go stand outside of their own houses and their own properties or their flats and so on and smoke outside. And unless they are forced to, for example, if you live in a flat complex, and let's say there are smoking alarms installed within the units, very few times do you actually have a scenario where smokers would go and stand outside of their own places where they live and smoke outside. Very few times. I'll stress it again. Very few times. Why? Because in many scenarios, I have visited people, known people, who actually smoke inside their properties, inside their houses, and inside their living spaces. It's a pretty severe odor, and it's not easy to ignore that smell, specifically if it's within tight spaces or within confined spaces. I mean, it's an odor that pulls in, it gets absorbed by the furniture. It gets absorbed in the overall sort of like atmosphere of the house. If you guys have ever driven in a car with someone that is a smoker, the inside of the car literally reeks of cigarette smoke, which is also a scenario because the tobacco smoke is actually absorbed into the upholstery of the car. And it just has this, if you're someone that has a sensitive sinus, like myself, you know, it just quickly goes sideways for you, primarily because depending on the kind of tobacco product, you'll have just a bad reaction overall in that scenario. Now, we'll quickly step into a short musical break. And after that, we'll come back and head into the rest of this morning's session here of my Sunday morning take on your number one talk radio station, and we'll be back after this.
I love you.
Show me.
Started, you know that I will love you. Lately, since we parted, I truly know that I need you. I give it all up for 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 you.
Yes,
I give it all up for you.
Yes,
I give it all up.
Yes,
I give it all up for you.
Yes, I would.
Totally broken hearted, guilty of what I did to you. Thank you, since we parted, I truly know that I need you. Yes, I do, because I give it all up. I give it all up for you. I give it all up for you. I give it all up for you.
Yes,
I give it all up for you.
Yes,
I give it all up for you.
Yes,
I give it all up for you.
Yes, I
thank you.
Now coming back there from the musical break, and as we specifically head in to well, the top of the hour, obviously, or coming or getting close to the top of the hour, as we just heard the sounds of Fowls with the song "The Crest of the Wave." Before that, we had a little bit of a Simply Red with "Something Got Me Started." Where we left off in this morning's discussion had been the looking into, well, the event that obviously led to the broader understanding and the broader public awareness regarding health-related risks to smoking tobacco products. Now, as I mentioned at the start of specifically of the discussion, had been that since the 1950s, broader advocacy and specific product awareness started happening regarding the health-related risks of consuming the particular tobacco products, and all of this started primarily with various consumer groups obviously acknowledging that something's a bit off. Now, obviously citing the successful court cases that were brought against the tobacco companies in 2000 and 2002, this obviously, you know, was sort of like the success after so long, or after struggling, or after you know, challenging for so long. The interesting particular scenario obviously had been that on 11 January of 1964 is that the U.S. Surgeon General at the time, Luther Terry, highlighted that smoking is directly linked to the lung cancer, or the rise or the emergence of the particular threat. Now, Terry himself had been an American physician and a public health official, and he served in the role of a Surgeon General of the United States from 1961 to 1965, and that he is best known for being the U.S. government official that brought forth the warnings against the dangers and the impact of tobacco use on personal health. Now, in his particular role as a Surgeon General, in 1958, Terry became an assistant director, obviously, at the National Heart Institute in the U.S., and then he came to public prominence when the U.S. President at the time, John F. Kennedy, selected him as the Surgeon General of the Public Health Service, effective from 2 March of 1961. Now, although there had always been an awareness of the negative effects of smoking, it was not until the 1950s that evidence began to be published suggesting that cigarette smoking caused lung cancer and other diseases. Now, at the end of the particular decade of that time, so we're talking about at the end of, you know, 1959 to 1960, the Royal College of Physicians in the UK appointed a committee to investigate the relationship between smoking and health. That is the health, obviously, of the user. The committee in the UK report that was issued on 7 March of 1962 clearly indicated that cigarette smoking as a cause of lung cancer and bronchitis, and argued that it probably contributed to cardiovascular disease as well. Now, shortly after the release of that report, Terry then established the Surgeon General's Advisory Committee on Smoking and Health in the US, which he chaired, and this was aimed to produce a similar report for the United States. Now, his report's name was Smoking and Health, a report of the Advisory Committee to the Surgeon General of the Public Health Service, and it was released on 11 January 1964, which concluded that lung cancer and chronic bronchitis are casually related to cigarette smoking. Now, this report also noted or pointed out that there was suggestive evidence, if not definitive proof, for a causative role of smoking in other illnesses such as emphysema, cardiovascular disease, and various types of cancer. The committee also concluded that the cigarette smoking was a health hazard of sufficient importance to warrant appropriate remedial action. And in June of 1964, the Federal Trade Commission voted by a margin of 3-1 to require that cigarette manufacturers clearly and prominently place a warning on packages of cigarettes effective of 1 January 1965, stating that smoking was dangerous to health, in line with the warning issued by the Surgeon General's Special Committee. Now, the same warning would be also required in all cigarette advertising effective from 1 July of 1965. This particular landmark Surgeon General's report on smoking and health also stimulated a greatly increased concern about tobacco on the part of the American public and government policymakers, and it led to a broad-based anti-smoking campaign. It also motivated the tobacco industry to intensify its efforts to question the scientific evidence that linked the smoking and the diseases. The report was also responsible for the passage of the Cigarette Labeling and Advertising Act of 1965, which, among other things, mandated the Surgeon General's health warnings on cigarette packages. Now, I'll stop there. Importantly, just to put the bookmark over there, based upon the particular indication and the particular observation that I gave you guys of what I saw in the 80s. Now, yes, obviously being a kid and obviously trying to look at, you know, whether or not you actually saw these labelings back then. But here was the scenario. Growing up as a kid, there were a whole bunch of teenagers and a whole bunch of adults that were either direct family or that were friends of this direct family who was either starting out being smokers or who were smokers. And it was an interesting thing to observe of this safety labeling on the packaging of the cigarette, of the tobacco products. And when I say I didn't see much of it back then in the 90s, even though it started coming through in the 90s as well, in the early part of it, I didn't see much of the safety labeling being positioned on the tobacco products back then in Namibia. Now, you could ask a question probably of, did we in Southern Africa literally only start rolling out the safety labeling like 40 years after the fact of the matter? Because it will also give a particular indication of whether or not how we looked at products that interact with our daily lives, which is also things that you don't get to see or hear much about, even in a Namibian context, even in a modern day scenario. Reason being is that, and this is now where I get into the new trend that is popping up specifically in the broader scenario of Namibia. Now, back in last year, that is now 2025, we looked at the impact of the hookah and the hookah slash hubbly bubbly usage by teenagers, on school, who were mostly on schools, and the standing committee at the time, obviously visited certain regions. It was Hartab, it was Komas, and it was Irongo region. And they looked into the use of the hubbly bubbly slash hookah consumption trend by schoolboys specifically, during this observation period that they themselves did, and the engagement with teachers and with local educational staff to try and understand, you know, what are some of the contributing factors as to why these boys are actually, it's predominantly boys, but, teenage boys, but it'll, you know, you can also extend it to teenage girls as well. In terms of why do they use this product so much? Now, they were obviously trying to understand the health-related risks because this was a scenario of looking at whether or not this product actually, what does it actually do to the image of, firstly, to the school-going boy, to the school-going teenagers. Secondly, what do they know about this particular, trend? Thirdly, how often is it consumed by these teenagers? And finally, does it contribute or does it actually feed into any negative behavior that these teenagers would then display at the schools, primarily in the three regions that I just cited? Now, this is a report that you can find on the website of the Parliament of Namibia. It came out last year. And the scenario with this report was it didn't actually go fully into the health-related risks, which is a sort of like a letdown if you are someone that, you know, that wishes to understand what are the actual health risks. Because they were obviously trying to look at the social impact of usage by these teenagers at school. And obviously they were trying to look for, if you look at the writing, how the report was also written, does it alter the behavior of these teenage boys and girls? And what does this altering of behavior lead to actually? Now, I'll say it, but I'll also highlight it in terms of letting you know that obviously the conversations that we've had here at Eagle FM, and even the conversations primarily that I have conducted specifically with the, the lady from the, that gives us particular insights in terms of understanding the additional uses that, for example, things like the cannabis products can provide. Well, not cannabis itself, you know, but rather the use of hemp, which is the other industrial product or the other industrial based plant. And the important thing from this has been that the cannabis lobby in Namibia, I'll call it the cannabis lobby in Namibia, they've always cited that there is some sort of a bias specifically in the way that alcohol and tobacco products are allowed to be consumed on a broader base, but rather there's the stricter legislation geared or positioned against cannabis use. Now, you can understand the particular position that obviously the cannabis lobby would put up, because the cannabis lobby faces literally the wrath of the law, because under the law, cannabis is a forbidden substance. It's registered or it's highlighted as a particular, what do they call it, a class A or something. It's categorized under Namibia's particular legislation as a particular, you know, severe narcotic, even though it's not a narcotic, because, you know, various countries have already amended their legislation around this particular product itself, which obviously highlights that, and I can safely say this, we as Namibia, we have not invested strong enough in scientific research, that is research by ourselves, for ourselves, and that actually helps us Namibians to set a course for research, specifically just research in Namibia, and to strengthen this particular position. So until I get proven wrong, the jury is still out there specifically in whether or not we are convincing enough in actually pursuing the research component of strengthening the knowledge hub, the knowledge base of this country. Now, the Oversight Committee's report that I cited a little bit earlier is a interesting scenario because it tried to look into behavior behavior altering effects. Now, it is difficult to talk about behavior altering effects, specifically only if you had to talk to the teachers and to the learners at the same time, and try to understand, you know, whether how severe this, you know, the usage of, because Hookah and Hubbly Bubbly, which is the other name of the product, is a tobacco-based product. It is a tobacco product. The effects from this particular usage or consumption of this product is not being studied. You see, it took the health authority in the United States back in the 60s, and the health authority in the UK also back in the 60s to literally commission research and obviously laboratory testing to justify a hypothesis, meaning to prove a hypothesis correct or to reject a hypothesis. Now, these were government agencies or government authorities in the 1960s. In the same particular scenario, we are not seeing government agencies bring out research in Namibia. Now, this is the other particular component of this discussion as well. We don't see government ministries or agencies bring out research that looks at a product, a service, a installation of a piece of infrastructure, a aspect of, you know, what happens to a particular sector or particular thing out in the broader Namibian economy or landscape. We don't see this coming through from our own government departments, ministries, agencies, and officers. We don't see it. Yes, the research and development report from 2024, that the NCRST brought out, which in its own right highlighted the big thing, the significant statement that I knew, which you could see was present, being that we don't have much research going on, specifically in the humanities fields, and that most of the research, if it is conducted only for specific scientific and technical fields in the country, and that we have a lot of advanced degree students and academics who are recipients of scholarships and bursaries to other countries, who go and research in other countries, or, you know, they go write the research reports in other countries with the knowledge contained in that report being the property of the other country, because it's intellectual property first and foremost. Now, we have to we then sit with this with a conundrum, which is a major dilemma of an oversight committee specifically, which comprises of politicians that we voted for, who you can see you know, the good intention that they are trying to sort of like transmit as local politicians in Namibia, but you can also see the problematic positioning of their research, because it is research that the oversight committees do with the reports that they submit, is that the research has a flawed position. You see, they went and spoke to stakeholders within the educational realm of Namibia's basic education sector. The most important thing that they also needed to tap into is to try and find whether or not there had been any local industry research and analysis that was conducted regarding the use and consumption of the Hookah / Hubbly Bubbly tobacco products. Now, we obviously also heard that, you know, remixes and variations of the particular product are obviously produced in that report. Okay, I see I've got a caller coming through. Let me first answer that. Eagle FM, good morning. Okay. I think I got a missed call there. Don't worry. This was just a, sort of like a bad or late observation. Well, but I see the line flashing again. Eagle FM, good morning.
Oh, morning, Dwight, man. Good morning and Happy New Year and everything.
Angabona, didn't we wish Happy New each other Happy New Year already?
No, we did.
Oh, okay. Morning, morning. Yeah. Happy New Year again, Angabona.
Yeah, you know, it's also a beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this topic, I'm not saying that others are not relevant.
Mm.
But I think this one, in terms of youth unemployment, for example, to address that, just to do the research and development, because I know in most of those mission statements for the ministries and things like that, you have mentioned that these are recipients of degrees and postgraduate, undergraduate, other things.
Mm.
Much little is really done. In fact, it's just almost nothing.
Mm.
Except when we make reference to the registration in South Africa, the one as a criminal, and all these other pieces of registration, which are many of them are not even codified as yet.
Mm.
And they give some kind of challenge, you know. They give us so challenge, but then, because I remember during the Minister of Justice by that time, they were also, you know, because a lot of cannabis association organization, I always read them in the newspaper, you see them on demonstrating.
It's the cannabis, what's the guy's name? I speak to the lady a lot.
I speak
a lot to the lady because the other guy, she's the one that has more the scientific and industry insight versus versus the guys that are currently, you know, entangled in the legal processes, specifically with the, court cases against the police. Because it's technically that the police have arrested more the men, except for her, because she's worked in cannabis farms, specifically in California and also in other particular cannabis-based products or projects in other parts of the world, which would not be legal in Namibia, Angabona.
Yes, even that, because people can build on other researchers, findings, and all these recommendations and things like that.
Mm.
Because the minister, what I wanted to say in the Minister of Justice, by then, when the Honorable Dawson was there. So now, they were also waiting for those guys, saying that, you guys, bring a proposal, and we study it, and we look at the benefits, we look at the consequences, like the tobacco smoking and all this, what is it, the said cancer in the head. So what is it? Tobacco head. And so if you build on those research, and I'm sure those research can be funded, and there's a lot of money there.
Yes, they can be, Angabona. You are right, they can be.
So now, if they graduate, put themselves together. And you want to tell me that they can not come up with a proposal, because that is what the Minister of Justice is waiting for you to prove. Of course, they can use the South African one, but you know that people have been arrested. I remember even the president of Ganja, I think he just came out from jail.
Yeah, it's him. It's those guys that I reference that are always... That are always they're either in jail or they are continuously being challenged by the police, which makes anything that they say sub judice, meaning that it could influence their own court proceedings.
Yes, because you see, I know this, most of this young, most of these people, they might not have the knowledge and know-how Of course, they may understand the registration.
Mm.
They can put it here. They say, okay, you can use it at your home or whatever private, like it is in South Africa. But they, do they have the capacity? That's what I don't even know. I'm not going to even, I'm not diminishing them or whatever.
Mm.
Do they have the knowledge and know-how how to present? Because it's just like you are coming up with a, it's a bill.
Mm.
It can be formulated just like other acts or bills or registration and other things like that.
Mm.
But at the infant stage here on the ground, for you to do even literature review or whatever, your background and all this other thing, just to make sure that, yes, this one, what we are saying, is actually in, is not in contradiction, in conflict with the law. That's it. Mm.
No.
And so do they have that knowledge?
No, you are right, Angabona, because the concern out there is obviously how this research would be conducted, because like I highlighted just before I answered your call, was that No. It's actually a good point that you came to, because the oversight committee from the National Assembly that brought out the report on the hookah pipes that Helmut and I looked into on the home run last year, they could not go into a scientific dimension, Uncle Bona, primarily because you could see that they did not contact a laboratory, they did not contact a one or other particular health agency that specifically looks into smoking. Which is also another capacity issue that you've got to ask is, do our local politicians, when they are part of these oversight committees from the National Assembly, do they have access to this, to these various resources? Can they talk to an independent laboratory that can help them with tests, provide them with research or with research capabilities to sort of like solidify and strengthen their position? Because now all they did, Angabona, was that they went and spoke to the teachers at these schools in Orongo, Hardap and Comas. They spoke to the teenagers, that the teachers had to ask these teenagers to please stay behind and please give your 2 cents of testimony to these MPs. And it just ends there. So there's no other authority, no other agency, no other health organization that gets contacted regarding the effects of smoking, moist tobacco, tobacco products, let's say, that come from the Arab, the Arabic world.
No, I'm
done with that particular part. Just stating that, you know, that unfortunately the oversight reports were not complete in their particular perspective of looking at the effects of smoking by teenagers who are still on school, and the kind of smoking product and what it does. All they did was just go.
The consequences is so hazardous.
Yeah.
That's why even when we came in the office, when Namibia became independent, now the people were smoking in the office. This one you are selling the office, this one smoking there, you know, until that one was banned.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see people smoking in the offices and everywhere, public and things like that.
Mm.
Although you see some few ones, because people who are dealing that thing, they are at the most least, actually, apparently. But for you, like, for example, I mentioned that some of these studies are published. I think it was last year or the other year, could be last year or so, when Dr. Sangula Kanumbi was there, there was also an article, a paper that was produced as a publication for the government. So now that also talked about, I think it's cannabis and health, something like that, for cannabis health. And the usage and the benefits of cannabis and the effect, the negative effects of cannabis.
Mm.
And the other things. So now, and some years back, I know that one of the business person or millionaire has got a license for cannabis. And but it's not for here, but apparently I think he got it here or Swaziland or wherever.
Mm.
But it's the person that can use it. then these are the people who have got some big tenders in supplying all these things with the government. I know they were there before Corona, when we remember used to have a problem of oxygen and all these other things, cylinders and all these things. All these things, the studies and all these things are there for us. What I'm saying is that when we now cry for unemployment, do we just want to start? Because you can study on cannabis, for example, and tobacco. Even when if you have studied economics, we are even good because you're going to manipulate figures nicely and cost all these things and all these things. And you now, but you use, you do, that's why we are saying, use other people's literature review. So it's just so difficult because most of us, everybody that comes from this institution, they have all produced dissertation. So dissertation, can't they do the same thing and study? Because some of these, like you say, laboratories are there, and this is the government is there to help them and all these things. Are they just failing? Well, is it, that's why sometimes I say the coordination of these things. So let's not talk about the usage of smoking or whatever. What about industrial development? Industrial development. We have got, you know, people are talking about climate change and they adore these things, plantation of trees and all these things. And we want to make sure that the whole plant become green land, not green land for America to come and steal it.
Yeah, Uncle Bono, we know that land is not green. That one is full of ice.
Oh my God. So I went to the...
No, it's okay. It's okay, Uncle Bono. It's 100%.
We are not done here. Let's do it. Because I know people will not call because they might not even have an interest or whatever in this thing. But we are saying, we are talking about social economic development. We are talking about employment. And not only in the area of cannabis and tobacco, there are many other areas. Development initiatives and all these things, strategies that have been developed. Now it's a matter, even this action plan, this implementation plan, they are all in place. So can we have a new thinking, a new understanding, a new beginning, all of us? I know you are researchers, you are doing your best to make sure that you really give us the best in every area. Can you come to Nyoka was here? I know already Nazi, whatever, I did not speak to him, maybe they were just relevant. It was, if it were just like that, it is good because we could to learn. And all of you guys. Now, I don't know whether it's advertisement or whatever, what kind of information do we expect again to get? We have got those things, our degrees. That's why when you get your degree or LLB, you are not yet a lawyer. You must still be trained to become a lawyer. This, the 9 months of those ones that they go through is to make sure that you are now a legal practitioner. And the ethical ish conduct there is the same principle that you can do. Because most of these things, they are marketing, they are public, you know, this is in your profession and many, many other professions. Can't they see the need that, yes, we must develop this sex?
We need to employment
for ourselves, or even to help those guys who are cannabis, because this, some of these topics, they are researchable. They want to go to security cluster, where you cannot even get, you know, sometimes I will tell you, this one is not researchable. Nobody can give you information on these things.
Yeah, I know what you mean there, Uncle Bono, because I once asked the communication department of the police, is it possible to get a, you know, like the statistics on the various crime statistics for like a period, you know, like for a year? And then I was told that is sort of like eyes and ears only research, information, meaning it's something that you don't easily see getting released to the public, so the public know, oh, so this is how much crime took place in this month versus that month. Like we hear of the economic statistics.
You see, but unless you use this administrative data, which you can give to the police and feel like that people are gender only related issues and that what.
Mm.
You know, the other usage is you let's see if it is a crime, you have committed a crime because you are using cannabis.
Mm.
You go to jail.
Mm.
Now the other research and all this information that they are who is going to do the research for you or even for the police.
Mm.
Because you just say don't answer. So we are saying if those are the challenges and the opportunities that the challenges are there, the opportunity to convert those information in these things so that they can then people can see the use, the benefit of these things. All these things I mentioned about industrial poles, industrial tree development, and we, you know, why we are importing, because we, people maybe in Namibia, for example, they also want to import the wood, but not the one from. But we can also now produce wood and all those things from cannabis. Then we now make sure that, yes, even to want to build our traditional homes and things like that, we have the poles. Because the poles that we are seeing, only the ones that are coming from there for electrification of the rural area, like where I am now, it's only maybe one pole. The other one will be, I don't know how many kilometers. That's why most of these houses, they have nothing. It's also the expenses of the pole. But if you can say, okay, let's do it again. Let's supply these villagers who are always in darkness with light. You produce poles and all these things. I just feel that any organization can still create thousands of jobs for these things. For this, some of this research that need to be done. And so before, because we have taken too long, and I'm sure it's worth it, because nobody even come, because I always listen to you. Now you have a lot of programs now. I listen to you this morning, I listen to you this other time, listen to you. And you see, people must take books. What are they using their phone? Next time, any platform, may I tell them, please, if you want information and development, everybody must download the Eagle FM app. They are always telling us that, you know, the radio, the what is true. Because these things are expensive. How do you go out and do this research and not be paid?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be paid more. So I think, I'm not saying you, I'm just saying everyone who can do those kind of research and all these things, some of this finding, especially IUM, I always listen to their graduates because they come here. And then Dr. Namand is telling them, please, Dr. Namand is telling, you guys go and translate this thing into action. And we don't want people to be going to America or wherever. He's always mentioning the thing. Because the knowledge that you have, that's why I'm suggesting in conclusion now, that yes, those people who can be given bursaries. And when they come, you identify the areas where they should study.
Yeah.
And then bursary, when they come, they now work for the government. They now work for the society. But you keep them, you retain them for some time. Because these guys, they just come from the government, they sponsored and what, off they go. And the private, sector is watching them from there. And in the process again, most of these programs are paralyzed.
That is true.
Justice that is waiting for you, convincing them, right proposal. And these people, I know, like I said, I'm not doing their knowledge. I always listen to the sister there in Warisbay and all these things. But can't you see now help the society here? Because it's their parents that are suffering them. Who's going to help them now? Well, it's now equipped with this knowledge. The ones, this is where they are, not equipped. I remember last time, some years back, Rashiyama presented the argument on the, I think it's in higher court now, and I think it was the first case actually, on cannabis research. And he mentioned it there, even that, where are the people to take up that route and then go to, because you have to convince me as a judge. So tell me now, why is he not in conflict with his religion? Before you enact that registration, how many years are it going to take? And the development is still moving forward. I mean, the battle is still standing still.
Yeah.
And you have got people who are there who are not even supposed to be there, actually in jail.
Do you know what is the issue of firstly trying to take the understanding of trying to change the law, that law that prohibits the use of cannabis in Namibia, is that primarily the guys are taking this law to the courts for the courts to give them sort of like a support base to work from. They're actually supposed to take this to the National Assembly, you know, that they are supposed to take it to a political party who has to debate this particular aspect, because the law gets changed in National Assembly and in National Council. The courts can't change the law. The courts can only say we have to work in accordance with the law that exists.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If you bring the case to me now, to bring the case to me, of course, I will look at the law, the parliament, those ones. I know most of these things, the judicial, those case studies and other things, when the things are passing parliament, they go to the law drafters, and they all these things and all these other things, and make sure that, yes, no conflict within the existing laws and things like that. Until you now have a case, a law case, that you can use and say, now we are going to defend your client now in that case. Of course, maybe you use South African or these common laws and things like that. But I'm so sure that yet, before that happens, do they have even the money to pay me, even for example, I'm just giving an example of these things and say, yes, this is the case and things like that. They don't have the money to pay. They won't. And the lawyer, or anything has to be challenged before it's, let them take it there. Like I said, it's the same process of formulating laws, bills, and acts. It's the same process. So it can emanate from the village. So that's why I'm saying, let them coordinate those guys and help them. We want to have some study.
And you know what's even the funny thing, Agubona? I think recently the Inspector General himself literally said that a law can only be changed to force them as the police. A law can only be changed if the right channels is followed, specifically of trying to change the law or trying to cancel a law. If they literally take it to the National Assembly, National Council, a platform, instead of now going to the court and asking the court to call a law unlawful, and the court says, how can I if I have to follow the law that you are trying to challenge? You must take this law literally to another place where it can get debated upon.
Then who's going to do it? Who will help them? Because they, you see, those are kind of things that we say, let's study now, do that. Because those who want to do the research, they can continue from where the general and all these things that have entered. So they can continue from there. When you now continue, that's why the purpose of research is actually to produce knowledge, isn't it?
Yeah.
You produce knowledge and solve problems in society. How are you going to do that? It's by adding to the knowledge base, which is going to be, which will solve problems of the society, whether it's employment or registration. Morning, ma. So, thank you very much, Dwight, for giving me an opportunity.
Not a problem,
so brother. We can continue again, but at least encourage those graduates who are complaining not having jobs to carry out those research.
Yeah.
And do some publication and solve the unemployment issues.
Not a problem. Thanks a lot, brother. And coming back from that engagement, dear listeners, obviously, as you heard there, the single most important thing is the research component. Now, if you tell me, okay, Dwight, okay, right here in front of me, specifically in the studio, we've got a publication of the recent Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism's Tourist Statistical Report of 2024. It actually came out last year, because I think my colleague David was there, when this report was unveiled. So it's statistics of 2024 released in 2025. Just so that you know, 2024 released in 2025. So it's 2024's stats. The downside is this is but a trend analysis report. This is not a research report. A trend analysis report means that there's data. The data has to be claimed, has to then be manipulated that speaks to the particular question you're asking. The question being, how many people came to Namibia as a tourist? And what are the various classifications and categories as a tourist that this person comes to Namibia as? And the single most important thing was obviously showing you the difference between that trend analysis report and the report of the Oversight Committee on the Hooker / Hubli. But before we continue, we'll quickly take a short ad break.
The festive season is a time for traveling, a time to reunite and celebrate with loved ones. But most importantly, it's a time to obey the road rules. Check your tires, wear your seatbelt, drive sober, adhere to speed limits, and walk responsibly. Do the right thing and save lives this festive season. Your family awaits.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Coming back there from the short break right there. Now, we've got an important thing to look into. Primarily, getting back to the subject matter regarding that on the 11th of January 1964, on this particular day, the U.S. Surgeon General at the time, Luther Terry, issued a report or brought out a report. A research report that they looked into specifically about the health effects from the consumption of tobacco products. What does it do to the people? Now, just like the conversation, the caller's contribution and conversation that we had just now recently, we need more such particular reports highlighting specifically the impact and starting from significantly big sectors or industries in Namibia, mining's impact on various components of everyday Namibian life, the impact of overfishing on our marine resources, the overuse of organic versus non-organic fertilizer in agriculture. We need more of these reports specifically to understand the broader use, the broader damage, if damage is caused, the broader influences, if influence is being observed, the broader scenarios and influence ranges specifically, if there are further knock-on effects to be observed or to be anticipated, that needs to be researched as well. Now, I'll say this also, just to throw another curveball into this discussion. So, back in last year, in 2025, and I spoke about this scenario, there was a World Health Organization / Ministry of Health report that came out that was done. This report was actually there based upon an overall assessment of Namibia's public health system. Now, this report obviously was just based upon what's the status of Namibia's public health system, which technically also is sort of like an assessment report. I'm using these various terms like trend analysis report, assessment report, and other certain kinds of extra adjective-based words that help to just define or to differentiate from research. Research takes a couple of steps, meaning you either go and explore something new, which is exploratory, meaning you go and collect your own data and you generate your own results, and you do your own trend and your own statistical analysis, and you then generate the report. Or you do desktop and secondary research. Okay, desktop forms part of secondary. Or you do secondary research. Primary research is you doing a first ever research of its kind in Namibia. And secondary is you build from someone else's work, meaning you just take it a little bit further or you expand it into a specific kind of a sphere. Now, primary and secondary research components are things that we actually need to do a lot more of. And this also means, just like the caller's contribution highlighted, that potentially, since we are now generating a lot more university graduates, which who are exposed now to research methodology and other particular things, why not get involved in these particular scenarios? And specifically also, since we now have three university health departments, they also need to start playing a particular role in this, because we need to start understanding the various particular leading health hazards in Namibia. What does it look like? The leading, if I can call it sort of like accidents or causes of death in Namibia. What are these particular scenarios? Does it define that Namibia potentially might be a very violent society, or does it define that Namibia might be a substance consuming society, or does it define that Namibia has a particular issue with traffic, with driving? Because there is that statement that Namibians love using, that and this is an everyday discussion, but if I go and ask, okay, where are these stats? Where can I find these stats regarding road accidents? Then you would have to go look in the, for example, in the statistics of someone like the National Road Safety Council, or the Roads Authority, or even try to look for, like, let's say, like, police reports and stuff like that, because you've got to correlate all these particular statistics, or even the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund. You've got to correlate all these data sets with each other and try to understand now who's actually giving the best sort of like presentation of this question. If it's Substance Abuse Authority, who do you look at? The Namibian Police's statistics or the Ministry of Health statistics? If it's other particular scenarios about violent crime, for example, is it the Namibian Police's statistics, or is it, let's for example say, the Ministry of Justice or the judiciary? Yeah, judiciary, because it's separate from the Ministry of Justice now. Now, getting back to where we left off, obviously, with the discussion based upon what this report in its own right highlighted. Now, the report of this 11 January 1964 landmark designation specifically, or this position that government authorities took specifically by actually confirming that tobacco use does contribute to lung cancer, in its own right highlighted a key particular pathway. Well, now, when I say pathway, this means that the research is not to say conclusive, it's not to say that it ends there, but it's research that obviously starts a particular, or it gets a specific ball going in motion. Now, when I say ball in motion in this regard, that comes to the research or a scientific report for that matter, that comes through from a particular government authority, is primarily it sets a precedent in one scenario, but it also helps to start a specific direction of interrogation. Now, the direction of interrogation has nothing to do with like police or authorities or anything, or anyone being wrong for committing any wrongdoing. The interrogation is from a scientific perspective regarding the use of consumer products, or consumer consumption of various consumer products. Products that anyone would have thought potentially, since no one is shouting at the top of their lungs that this product is bad, maybe it is, inherently good. Put the word inherently in inverted commas. Now, when I say that, it is primarily that the old adage, meaning the saying that pops up, the motto that says, overconsumption of something or too much of something obviously starts becoming a bad thing, which is a given. You know, too much sugar, you end up with certain particular, you know, health-related risks. Too much alcohol, health-related risks. Obviously, we know of tobacco now because that forms part of our discussion. And all these particular things are usually, they are actually facts because they become factual. Now, the biggest concern obviously had been, what precedent would this report set? Now, it obviously was generated, as mentioned, a whole 60 years or 70 years in that direction, in 1964 on 11 January. But it was a landmark report and a landmark position that that an American government authority took on a consumer product. Now, what this report actually did was that they analyzed more than 7,000 scientific articles and papers. So they went and looked at actual research and actual scientific contributions that can be leveraged for this particular discussion. But before we continue, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take a short break, a short musical break, and we're going to come back right after this.
Thank you.
Now coming back there from the sounds of Groove Armada with the song I Won't Kneel, and before that it was Diodato with the song Super Strut. Now, getting back to where we left off just before the musical break was that the report on smoking and health that was brought out in 1964 by the US Surgeon General at the time, they looked at 7,000 articles and papers. So they went through literally 7,000 articles and papers. Back then, there was no computer, no Google, no internet, no AI to summarize things for them. And the report literally looked for enough evidence that helps to back up or reject this particular hypothesis regarding smoking and health. And it linked, and it found the link or the linkage between smoking and chronic bronchitis, emphysema, and heart disease and lung cancer. Now, the release of the report was one of the top news stories that happened in 1964, and it led to policies that aimed to discourage smoking, such as the Cigarette Labeling and Advertising Act of 1965 and the Public Health Cigarette and Smoking Act of 1969 in the United States. Now, the background of this particular let's call it as this result of this report was that the health effects of tobacco at the time had been debated among recreational users, medical experts, and governments since its introduction to European culture. Now, hard evidence for the ill effects of smoking became apparent, meaning it started becoming obvious with the results of several long-term studies that were conducted in the first half of the 20th century, such as the epidemiology studies of Richard Doll. Richard Doll specifically was a British physician, a British doctor who became an epidemiologist in the mid 20th century and made important contributions specifically in his discipline. And also pathology studies of Oscar Auerbach, who was an American pathologist and medical educator who helped also with the cigarette smoking to cancer linkage, research. So on 12 June of 1957, the previous Surgeon General, Leroy Birney, declared it the official position of the U.S. Public Health Service that the evidence pointed to a causal relationship between smoking and lung cancer. So meaning the American authorities or the American government already made its particular position known regarding this developing public health issue. Now, a committee of the UK's Royal College of Physicians issued their report, as mentioned a little bit earlier, on 7 March 1962, which clearly indicated that cigarette smoking as a cause of lung cancer and bronchitis, and argued that it probably contributed to cardiovascular disease as well. Despite this particular report, there was little interest in the US government and Congress at the time in studying any connection on their side between health and tobacco smoking, because of the need to satisfy the interests of the tobacco industry and the tobacco growing states of the United States. Now, after pressure from the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, the National Tuberculosis Association, and the American Public Health Association, the U.S. president that stepped in at that stage, John F. Kennedy, authorized the creation of an advisory committee that met from November 1962 to January 1964. Now, the formation of this committee primarily was the particular first step that obviously had to happen. Now, the Surgeon General's Advisory Committee on Smoking and Health consisted of 10 members, which was chaired by Luther Terry, as we already highlighted what his role was, because he was the Surgeon General that brought this report out. The Surgeon General, because he obviously became Surgeon General in 1961, and the other members, even though they were experts themselves in their medical or scientific fields, none of them specialized in smoking and health. As non-expertise was required specifically in the attempt to remove any investigator's potential bias. So the aim was that they needed to look for, firstly, that the panel needed to consist of people who might not who may be biased if they had prior experience in smoking and health, meaning if they've ever researched anything to do with smoking and health in that particular combination. And the further sort of like developments for this committee was that a Dr. Herman Krebel of the National Cancer Institute in the U.S. was also appointed as the committee's executive director. But lawyers from the tobacco industry forced him to resign after he told a journalist that he believed evidence definitely suggests that smoking was danger to health and members.
When life gifts you a washing machine that just quit, take control with Express Credit. Borrow up to $32,000. Same day approval. Visit www.expresscredit.com.na or SMS gift to 32274.
Coming back there from the particular break right there, which signals the 7 a.m. period. But before I actually say my goodbyes, just need to highlight this particular talking point. Now, after Krebel was removed, obviously from concerns that were cited by the lawyers of the tobacco lobby, the role of the executive director was then also the other members of this committee were selected among those who did not hold a public position on whether smoking harms health. And the role of the executive director at the time was left unfilled after Krebel's particular departure. Now, they obviously brought in the people, each one of them with their own particular expertise. But the findings that was contained within the report concluded that the cigarette smoking damages health significantly, obviously, and it found that the cigarette smoke is the primary cause of chronic bronchitis, and that smokers had a 70% increase in age-corrected mortality rates. The smoking is also correlated with emphysema and heart disease, and it increases the chance of developing lung cancer by 10 to 20 times. For pregnant women who smoke, that they were also more likely to give birth to underweight newborns. Now, remember, this was a research report that came out in 1964, not in 2025 or in 2026, in 1964, meaning it was a leading particular development in terms of how we need to look at certain particular products that we consume on a daily basis. Now, that does bring us up to the end for this morning session of My Sunday Morning Take, dear listeners. Ultimately on that scenario, do stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And do enjoy the rest of your Sunday, wherever you might find yourself. I do hope that you guys also have like clouds in the sky. Alternatively, let's see each other again. Same time, same place next week, obviously, or during the course of this week on the home run here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM.